Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. You know, a couple months ago, we set up shop at patreon.com/itsthereal. We decided that for as much as we do on our own, it would go way further if we had the help of you guys out there, and you guys have responded in kind, and it is so kind. Thank you very much. Shout out to everybody who has pitched in for $2 a month or $3 a month, all the way up to $10, $15, $50 a month. Shout out to all you guys who believe in the future that we are building here. And we had these grand visions in this pre-COVID world of how we would deliver some gifts back to you guys.
Yeah, and none of them make sense anymore. But
yeah, because we wanted to like invite people over to the house. We wanted to have them experience, you know, an interview with Jim Jones or Cameron or Bun B or Freeway or whoever. Can't do that now.
Not happening right now.
No. We wanted to do things.
I mean, maybe we could have people stand in like the alleyway and sort of look in the window.
We could do that.
We could do that.
Listen, no bad ideas anymore, right?
Yeah, we're just throwing out all good ideas. But I think a better idea,
yes,
a more interesting idea than having people stand in our alleyway for an hour for a phone call they can't hear,
yeah,
through the window,
yeah,
might be that you and I,
yes,
have a battle,
yes,
of wits, a battle of with the shits.
Yeah.
A battle of AKAs. Your AKAs versus my AKAs. All of your nicknames that you've come up with over the past 5 to 10 years.
Yes.
Versus mine.
Okay. Top 20? Top 30? Top 400? How are we doing this?
It's not top... I mean, I guess we could do top 400.
Okay.
For a very captive audience.
That's right. Captive, like, in the...
Yeah, in the alleyway.
Yeah.
For an hour and a half.
So, so this is going down. This is happening. We've agreed to it.
Yeah.
We have not shaken hands because...
You know, COVID.
Yeah. But that's happening on this Sunday.
This Sunday.
Do we have a time yet?
Let's say 5 p.m. because that's when we do our Zoom calls.
East Coast time?
East Coast time.
Eastern Standard Time?
Eastern Standard Time.
New York time?
New York time.
Okay. 5 o'clock p.m.
Alert the New York Times.
In our Zoom.
Uh-huh.
You can get the information by signing up at patreon.com/itsthereal.
Yeah. We're only doing it for people who sign up for Patreon.
Okay. So anybody who contributes to this thing of ours.
Yeah.
Ours.
Mm-hmm. The greater ours.
The greater ours. Will be able to be a part of this thing.
Yeah.
On Sunday at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
I don't know where we are in terms of daylight savings right now.
Hmm.
Whatever 5 o'clock is in this, you know, where we are right now.
5 o'clock to you?
We're not debating the definition of 5 o'clock.
Does time matter?
No.
Yeah.
Whatever this is, that's what we're doing.
Okay. See you on Sunday. Jeff was on the podcast today.
On the podcast today is Mozzie.
Mozzie.
The West Coast legend.
Beyond Bulletproof is the album. Look out for his new music now. Shout out to Too Short. Shout out to everybody on the West Coast, the Bay Area, all up and down the coast. Man, first time talking to him. A lot of energy.
So much energy.
Sounds so much like a typical guy from the Bay. All the language.
Yeah.
All the energy.
Yeah.
All the attitude.
Yeah.
Just great dude. Really happy to talk on the phone with him. And hopefully we can link up with him in person,
mm-hmm,
on the other side of this.
Jeremy Corrales is on the podcast.
Okay. So Jeremy Corrales, Los Angeles... West Coast legend?
West Coast legend.
Okay,
although
yeah,
he's from Boston.
Yeah. And we talk about Dunkin' Donuts.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about Big Poppy.
Yep.
We talk about Home Depot.
All the things that you would want to talk to a Boston / Los Angeles legend about.
Was it Home Depot or was it Lowe's? I don't know. Either way,
yeah,
Jeremy is very, very, very into woodworking, maybe metalworking.
It's interesting that
the
first two people we talked to had terrible things happened to them today.
Yeah, well,
which you can find out in the beginning of each of those phone calls. And then we had Maxo Cream on the podcast,
who only did terrible things to anybody who came across him in Grand Theft Auto.
Yep. Very different.
It makes for such an interesting conversation. Maxo is one of a kind. Go back and listen to his full episode of Waste Time with It's the Real. A dynamic personality, a fantastic artist. It is always a pleasure to link up with Maxo. Shout out to Ezra. Shout out to the whole team. Rock Nation, everybody over there.
Yep.
But Jeff, first, we're going to get on the phone with Mozzie.
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, 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 pew.
That's a weird ringtone.
Pew.
E-Money.
Mozzie!
What up?
Man, what that shit do, gang?
Mozzie, how is your day going so far?
Platinum. Platinum. You know, this is the platinum edition. Every time I wake up with a million in my account, man, I can't complain.
No, why would you? Yo, but shit. Your car just got fucked up.
Fuck my whole life up, brother.
Wait. What exactly happened with the car? I missed out on all this.
The car, I was on my way to come over here so I could do the interview for y'all, and I was rolling up some weed. I got on the freeway, rolled up some weed, and as I was getting on the freeway, the curb, I hit the curb, and it just scratched. It scratched the 4G autos. And you scratched the autos. But I didn't only scratch it, I dented it and everything. So, you know, that's a little minor headache.
Fuck. Wait, are you doing this, like, interview on the side of the road at this moment?
Nah, I'm at the studio. Oh, okay. I made it to my destination.
There you go. Wait, were you the only car on the road?
Nah, it was hella cars on the road, but it was just a little scrape. I didn't go flat or nothing. I just scraped it. And you know, it's they what you call them, Davo, when the lips stick out? Oh, they deep dishes.
Yeah.
They deep dishes.
Like
so
the pizza,
they,
yeah.
Yeah, so it
I usually just call it a camel toe.
A camel toe, man. Come on. Scrape the fuck out of it.
God damn.
You know, I got Fargo, and the crazy part is I just got it fixed. It costs about like $1,500 for them to sweep through and fix it, fix all the little scratch and dings in it. And
here you go again.
Yeah, here I go again. And it probably cost me a little more because I did a little more. It's a little more severe. But I'm here.
What was it like when you took your driver's test the first time? Did you pass?
Not the first time. I didn't pass the first time. I think on the written, I failed two times. And then on the actual driving test, I failed two times. My grandmother took me both times. I was hella motivated because she was going to buy me this little brown truck.
And then you failed twice.
I failed twice. And I was trying to get it at like 16 and a half. I think I didn't get it till I turned 17.
Does that mean that you had to rely on like one certain friend to like sort of drive you around, be your chauffeur for like a year or two?
Oh yeah, for sure. I was 16 and shit, so I was a kid, and we was already buying cars. Little did she know, I already had a car tucked off that I bought for like $300-$400. It was a little Subaru, but and we were stealing cars at that time too. So you know, we was getting around, but 16, 17, I think you're still eligible to ride a bike without looking like a dork.
Yo, what's that sound system sounding like in that Subaru at 16?
Oh, that motherfucker barely worked. You know, we had the tape player. You had to put the tape player in there. You remember the little auxiliary with the tape?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I had to put the tape player in there, so it was spunky, but I enjoyed it.
What were you listening to back then?
Back then, I was on Messy Marv. Messy Marv. I fuck with a lot of Jacka.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace.
Mac Dre. Outside of you know what I'm saying, area, you know, I was on the trenches. I was on my niggas, my peers. We was rapping it. So I became fans of my peers and some of the older homies in the hood, like Perkzilla Snubs, Lil Nick, you know what I'm saying, Stacks. It was just, you know, people who I seen every day and that I knew that actually live everything they was hollering.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, flash forward like 20 years or so, like, how did the Too Short collab come about?
Too Short, Big Dog. Yeah. Man, that's the fella. I function with Short Heavy. I love his consistency, man. He been at this shit for a minute and he still at it. So, you know, I'm purely motivated by just his marathon in this shit. But, me and Young T.O. put a track together, and you know, my management, he was like, I hear Short on this motherfucker. I'm like, tap in with brother, man, see if we can get him on there. And he blessed it, and I think that nigga had the best verse on that motherfucker, if you ask me.
Yo, you know, we've seen your name for the last like 4 or 5 years really out there, right? But when you were like coming up, how quickly did you sort of assimilate to the Bay Area sort of rap community? Like, were there people who were like excited that you were coming up, or were there people who were sort of like apprehensive?
I think they was excited. The whole area opened up. It was love. It was like open arms. It's like they received me with just so much genuine love, man. All of them. Even the ones that I don't fuck with to this day, man. They even the ones that I don't fuck with today, they was functioning with a nigga heavy, man. Mm. It was purified love. And ain't no way I could smut that. Mm, I mean, yeah. You know, prior to me really cracking open that market, I was in San Quentin. So I was in there with a lot of yay area niggas. And just from, you know what I'm saying, the admiration I was getting in there and the love and the notoriety, it was like, ooh, it was crazy because these people from, you know what I'm saying, an hour, two, 3 hours away from me, and they fucking with me. Mm. And so, you know, I'm just gratitude, a lot of gratitude, just thankful, grateful.
We're very close with the Locks. They always told us that they're big fans of you as well. So, like, tell me how that relationship started.
Man, straight up off the dribble, you know, I get high. Ah, oh, that's my shit. I remember that vividly as a kid. And then, you know, Kiss, I remember that Why with Anthony Hamilton, one of my favorite songs outside of the gangsta shit. But, you know, that whole culture, even a DMX nigga, the whole culture. But I think I locked in with Jada Kiss through Trader Truth. You know, Big Brother Trader Truth.
Yeah.
He always be, anytime he can throw me an alley-oop, he make sure he live that motherfucker. And then, you know, Styles P, I don't remember exactly how we locked in, but it was love, man. You know, I still look up to them niggas to this day. You know, it don't matter. I don't give a fuck how big I get, how successful I am. It's, you know, I'm connected to my childhood, my roots, man, and them niggas played a big part.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're just like real dudes. And so, like, I think that, like, real recognize real, obviously. And so, like, you know, it is only natural that they would that you guys would all connect.
For sure, most definitely. Shout out to them.
Yo, Mozzie, right now is a time in the world where there's a lot of people who are reconnecting. You know, people have found that through Zoom or FaceTimes, they can have that human connection, even though people are staying mostly at home. Have you gotten any phone calls or FaceTimes or, you know, correspondence from people who you definitely did not anticipate hearing from?
Nah, not yet.
I mean, besides us.
I was waiting on y'all call. I ain't got no significant call from, you know what I'm saying, man? I ain't not yet, man. Everybody who I've been talking to is the same people I usually talk to. My circle's smaller than a dot, and I like to keep it that way, man. I'm really weird with the phones. I don't answer my phone. If I don't know the number, I don't answer that motherfucker. I'd be scared. I'm superstitious about it. I turn that motherfucker off when I walk in the house, man. I'm just real weird with the phone. So even if somebody did try to call, they probably wouldn't have got through. But,
well, what's, you know, the best form of communication if people want to do business with you? How can they track you down?
They got to call management. Mm. That's another reason why I'm weird with my phone, because I'm my heart is so golden. So if somebody called me and, you know, they want a verse or something, I don't know how to tell them what I charge. I don't know how to tell them I need 20,000, 15,000 a verse. It just don't feel right. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I send them. I make sure that they go through management. That way they be able to negotiate. I'm not a good negotiator. I couldn't sell weed when I was a kid because I was plugging niggas too much. I want everybody to be happy. I want niggas to feel blessed when they leave my presence. Mm. And so you know, I'm not too good at negotiation, and I leave that up to the management squad.
Yeah. I know you said you're weird with your phone. What apps are on your phone? Do you have any?
I got all type of apps on the phone. I fuck with the phone. The actual phone, I fuck with. As far as talking to people and, you know what I'm saying, me texting back, I'm kind of sloppy with it, man. I really don't, you know, I probably won't get back to you. But when I see you, it's love. It's love in the purest form. Every time I see, or when I do answer, it's love in the purest form, man. You feel me? And I just like to keep it that way.
Given that the world is so just sort of
fucked up
right now, what's the biggest change that this has brought to your life in the last like 40 days?
I ain't seen no cash.
Mm.
I ain't seen no cash money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm used to getting a lot of verses where niggas pull up with a bankroll. I've been seeing a little bit. But I ain't seen like I be seeing it. Shows, When niggas make that deposit for them shows, I ain't talking about my account. My account's still going brazy. Chase account, nigga, Wells Fargo's.
Yep.
All them niggas, they going brazy. But I'm talking about that cash, just bringing in that cold cash, man. I'm 20s and let my daughter thumb through it.
Yeah.
it kind of shriveled up on me.
I have this like idea that you're home and instead of like doing Zoom teaching, you're just teaching your daughters like how to count from actual cash.
Yeah, I just give them the money. I let her thumb through the money, man. I try to make it realistic for them, cause I'm raising young bosses, and
yeah.
So she eventually, as she gonna have to thumb through the money. We do the extra curriculum too. You know, we get on that. What we got? I forget what it's called. What is it called? It's not Zoom. It's I forget what her program called. Alexia. We get on that Alexia. You know what I'm saying? It's on the iPad, little programs for the kids that all the schools recommend. But we get on Alexia and we go brazy. You know, I let her knock out a good amount of lessons or whatever the case. But I also like to make up my own shit just as so I can feel like I'm actually hands on.
It's
not just with society teaching her. It's not just with her teacher teaching her. I want to give her some actual game that she's gonna be able to be like, nigga, my dad taught me this for sure.
That's fire.
What was your like favorite thing to learn when you were growing up?
My grandmother, she was strict on me. She used to tweak, and I think my favorite thing was words. She bought me an encyclopedia. I don't know how to spell. I never won a spelling bee. I don't know how to spell to this day. I don't give a fuck about spelling. But one word I do know how to spell is E-N-C-Y-C-L-O-P-E-D-I-A, encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me an encyclopedia when I was a kid, and I was fascinated with words off the dribble. She'd play, you know, speeches from Martin Luther King or speeches from Malcolm X on the VCR. And, you know, I was just fascinated with the way they captured crowds with their words, like how people idolize them off of wordplay. And so, that was my favorite thing growing up, was just learning new words, tweaking on words, learning how to put them together, learning how to tweak them and make them rhyme. And, you know what I'm saying? Me just making everything, just bringing everything in sync.
Yeah, I mean, like, so... You know, I feel like the history of Oakland is so rich and you know, with the Black Panthers, and like there's a lot of stories that come out of Oakland. I don't know too much about Sacramento. What is the Black history of Sacramento?
Sacramento. Well, you know, they got the African American Muslims. They got that squad out there as far as, you know what I'm saying? But it's gang culture. I ain't gonna lie, the Black history of is gang culture. It's I don't know too much about what we had to endure in Sacramento. I know it was early on, I was taught that it was a racist city, probably, or very strict, just based on it's the capital of California. And, I know they laws as far as, you know, the way they treat us with the gang enhancement and how they lock us in at 18 on probation and never let us go. And so it was that's the way I seen it, because I was heavily involved with the politics versus, you know what I'm saying, the history. I was just more involved with the actual politics. So I just, whatever, everything that I endured firsthand, I don't know too much about what we had to endure early on in Sacramento, but, you know, I could just tell you about what I've actually endured. And I'm saying, that's the perception I get from it, is just being a strict city, lightweight racist. I don't really consider it racist until you go deep down south and you see how they operate. Then you'll be like, we really ain't racist. But early on, this is how I felt. I just felt, you know what I'm saying, it was a racist city. And, you know, it wasn't too many chances nor opportunities. And I felt like it wasn't, as far as the music was concerned. You had to go to the Bay Area to be a part of a music scene. You had to go to L.A. to be a part of a music scene. I feel like the people who was before us, you know what I'm saying, they didn't put in enough groundwork in giving back. I feel like as far as putting others on, not necessarily enough groundwork. They did an amazing job in the way they represent Sacramento, and I'm thankful for them. But I just feel like they didn't put enough groundwork in giving back and giving others an opportunity as far as musically or artistically or et cetera.
What was it like the first time that you heard your music on the radio? Like, what did that feel like? And where were you?
It felt like an M. It felt like an Amberly, a million. You know what I'm saying? It was damn near the same feeling. I ain't gonna lie. When I got that M, that was a totally different feeling. But nah, it was crazy, man. It was unbelievable. It's like, nigga, mama, we made it. It's that mama, we made it. It's like the dream is actually, it's crazy because you cultivate something for so long. And, you know, you just nourish it. And you see it actually get the blossoming. And it's like, damn, this shit finally working. Like, you know, we prayed on it. We prayed for this. It's like and now shit is just, it was crazy. I couldn't believe it. I felt like I made it. It was like signing a deal or something.
When you say we, when you're like, yo, we made it, and this is, you know, for the royal we, who are you talking about?
Oh, Park. I'm talking about Oak Park. It's a dream we all shared. I got people doing life right now, 40 years and elbows and things. And, you know, this is the dream that we share together coming up, my peers. The homies just a little older than me. You know what I'm saying? We was dedicated to this. The same way we was dedicated to banging, we was dedicated to this. We was dedicated to getting up out the trenches and being able to double back and drive what we want to drive and live how we want to live and put niggas on so they can go put they niggas on. And you know what I'm saying? It was just making it all worth it. I mean, we lost so many troops in the field. You know what I'm saying? So many people doing time behind this culture that we live in. And you know, I just feel like it was all for nothing if nobody was here to tell the story, man. Was all for nothing. It was, you know what I'm saying? I feel like it was just in vain.
Well, I mean, like, who was the first person that when you were growing up, you were like, that person has made it? Like, who's the first person you really looked up to like that?
First person I actually looked up to growing up, like, that nigga made it. My Uncle GP. I got an Uncle GP. He from Sacramento. He got out of pen after doing 10 years. And he went straight to work, and he put me on his album when I was 14. And Death Row was interested in signing them, and they sent him a Death Row pendant. And you know, this is, you know, and my whole family is big on Death Row too. Yeah. Not alone. And so, you know, that was big. And you know, he just a gangster getting out the pen, and I'm watching him come home, start from nothing, starting a little bucket. And a flip of Expedition and put it on Dubs and drop a new CD and put me on there. I was running around school with a CD and a plastic wrap cover. To have a hard copy CD plastic wrap at 13, 14 was big. I was in middle school passing that motherfucker around telling niggas to listen to number 14, nigga, the last verse. I'm on there going crazy. So that was the first person that I felt like made it. You know, I seen him do shows. He was getting paid for them. He was getting verses with all the big dogs, such as the Yuck Mouse, Messy Mars,
yeah,
64s, and you know, it was crazy. The Mac Dre's, the Keep the Sneaks.
Yep.
So yeah, GP the Beast, my uncle. That was one of my biggest inspirations.
So what does it mean to go from that kid in those high school hallways of 14 to now with Beyond Bulletproof? Who are you in 2020?
2020. Oh.
beyond just like a guy on the side of the road with a dented, you know, deep dish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, I'm so much more than I was. It's crazy. I'm so much more than I was. I have so many responsibilities, man, that I'm dedicated to nowadays. You know, I just dropped a song. It's called Boys to Men. And that's the best way to explain it, man. Boys to men, you know what? It's crazy. My thinking was crazy back in the days. I risked my life for so little. I sacrificed so much for so little. And that's just the thinking of a boy. That's the thinking of a boy. Now that I'm a man, I understand that. You know, I got to be here for my girly face gang, for these little girls. I got to be present. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not present physically, you know what I'm saying, me, due to whatever, however nature run its course, I got to make sure I prepare for them, for their future, you know, futuristically. I got to prepare for them and make sure they platinum or, you know, they got it a little, I got to make sure I provide that cushion. you know what I'm saying, something for them to fall back on if it gets spunky, or, you know, that good game, I got to put that out there, man, for them. So, you know, if I'm not present, they could tweak on that. But like I said, man, it's just boys to me, and I got to be here for my family. I got to make sure I'm one of the biggest soul providers right now. And, you know what I'm saying, I got to make sure they platinum. And, you know, I just got so much more to accomplish, man. And I just feel like, you know, the risk ain't worth the reward, as far as my prior activities and the way I was living. And so that's what you got nowadays, man. You got, I was telling somebody, I came in the game on straight bullshit, rah-rah, blah-da-da, nigga, head shot, neck shot, and now you got beyond bulletproof. Mm. To love one unconditionally is bulletproof. And so, you know, it's just a lot of growth, man. It's a lot of growth, and I'm actually excited about the man I've become.
Well, that is the best. So yeah. Shout out to you, Mozzie. We're sending all our love out to you. Congratulations to you. And, you know, hope that we can see you when this whole thing is over. And we look forward to all the new music on the way. Be well. Take care. And hope that deep dish gets worked out, you know?
Nah, you know I'm going to get that deep dish worked out, man. Appreciate y'all like a motherfucker, G-O-D. You know I'm going to pull up on you, blow down on you immediately.
There you go. Yeah.
Beyond bulletproof.
And now, Jeff, let's get on the phone with Jeremy Corellis. We should do ringbacks.
Ba-na-na-na-na. Bam-bam-bam. Ba-na-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na-na. Hey. Dan-dan-dan. Da-na-na-na-na. Hey.
I'm going to have to ask Jeremy what that is. Jeremy!
What up?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you?
It's been an interesting morning.
Already?
Yeah.
Already.
Talk about it.
Yeah, by the way, it's like 9 a.m. where you are.
I know. So my head is bleeding. I slammed my head into the shower caddy this morning.
On purpose?
On purpose, yeah.
Yeah, on purpose. Just for something new. You know?
Just to feel again.
And, yeah, so right now I'm... I look like 03 Dipset with the towel under my hat.
Is it possible to not go into work today?
I mean, I don't go in anywhere.
Just to give people an idea of where you are, and if you recognize that accent, yes, folks, he is from Boston, but he lives in East Los Angeles.
East Los Angeles, my second home.
What's it like out there right now?
Bloody.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little, yeah, the blood is flowing. It's kind of crazy in LA, man. It's nice to drive, though. There's no traffic, anything like that, so
that's gotta be so strange.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go anywhere, but I just drive around aimlessly.
I saw on your Instagram that you like went to like Joshua Tree or something, so like, was that an actual trip, or am I just like making that up?
No, so I drove through, basically you can go through the mountains to Palmdale. Well, yeah, it's not quite Joshua Tree, it's where Afro Man lives, but through like the Pasadena mountains or whatever, and then you end up in Palmdale, and then like I just drove back, so I didn't, it wasn't like a trip.
You weren't on a mission to go find Afro Man?
Yeah, wait, how did you find out that Afro Man lives there? Is it on their Wikipedia page?
Well, first of all, for real Afro Man fans,
yeah,
we know. There's a song called Palmdale that he had, and that's the first time I ever heard of it, actually, to be honest.
Very cool. You know, Jeremy, yeah. This is going great. Your head is bleeding, and you're here talking about Afro Man and where he lives.
If you get out, you know, once a week, where are you headed?
Man, that's a good question. I've been going to Ace Hardware.
For Band-Aids?
Yeah.
just seeing what kind of projects I can get myself into on the weekends.
Whoa. Well, are you like a handy individual?
I'm not. I'm trying to be, but so that kind of ties into me slamming my head into the shower caddy because I installed these like really strong shower caddies.
Are they made out of wood?
No, they're metal, but like they don't fall off, like no matter the, you know,
when you slammed your head into it, were you testing that it wouldn't fall off?
uh Let's just go with that.
Sure. Okay, you go to Ace Hardware. You're looking for a new project to work on. Are we talking like woodworking? Like you're actually going to do like metal work? What kind of?
Mostly stuff around the house, I'd say. Like, you know, getting a drill. I got a new hose to, you know, clean off the front, you know, stairwell to, you know, all that type of stuff. Just, you know, cleaning.
I love this. Yeah. I love this new side of Jeremy.
Yeah, wait, are you?
Here's
are
the
you...
thing, man. They don't think Jews can do this type of stuff.
I, so and I'm you are about here. To prove them wrong.
Or right. I mean, you just awesome. Slammed your head into a thing. Wait, are you looking at, like, YouTube for inspiration?
Man, I mean, listen, I'm a beginner, guys. Like, I'm starting small. I'm not out here, like, I'm going to build a, like, you know, car or
Jeremy,
not even
if you could pimp your ride in one way, what would you do?
It has to be the car I have now.
Yes, it does.
It does have to be the car you had.
Those are the rules.
Are the rules. Yeah.
All right. Well, I got my windows tinted, but I want them like dark. I want 5%. But I got to say, the stock sound system in a 2012 Honda Civic is not the worst thing.
Wait, wow. Okay, but I'm talking about, like, if you had to, like, because they would always, like, put something in your trunk that you just don't need.
Yeah, like a fish tank.
Oh,
yeah.
you're talking about West Coast Customs.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, they would put, like, a toaster in there and be like, hey, like, now you can make bread.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
I think so, too.
I like that. I'd maybe a coffee machine.
Mm.
Everything else would just be like, I'm not trying to drive with that in my car, you know?
Yeah, you would want, like, you know, 16 TVs.
Yeah.
You would want a paint job outside that's sort of like, you know, somewhat.
I mean, I mean, they did candy paint. I want candy paint for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, but like candy paint mixed with like Big Poppy, you know?
Yeah. Like, sure. Oh yeah, you're from Boston. Let's like really Boston your car up.
Yeah, so you get the
dunk. That's like some shit they would do. I'd be so mad if they did that. They're like, let's Boston your car out. I mean,
and
come on,
put
man.
Like three Dunkin' Donuts employees in your car.
Oh, if I had the Dunkin' colors.
Ooh.
That'd be fire, though. Can't
just and
Dunkin'
just for the
colors.
Record, did we or did we not with our friend Justin Fleischer talk about the Dunkin' Donuts like sweatsuits that they were selling on the Dunkin' website?
Yeah, I gotta say, and I hope they hear this. Y'all gotta tap in with me before you put that out because they sell out like crazy.
Yo,
and they're fire. I don't care if you like Dunkies or not; they're fire.
A lot of people know you, Jeremy, for your ear. I think a lot of people respect you for the artist that you have helped put on through the last decade. When you think about growing up in Boston and you think of the Boston scene. How different is it now, and what do you want to say about the effect that
Purple had in Boston over the last decade or so?
Oh, I'm loving it. I think that there's so much talent in Boston now. I think it was always there. I just don't think that people thought they could do anything in that city because there's a stigma of it has to be boom bap, it has to be throwback 90s, it has to be all these things, and I think, you know, around 2012, 2013, things started to turn around and people felt more comfortable, you know, making the art that they wanted to make. And, you know, somebody asked me the other day who my favorite artists are in Boston, and I just couldn't shut up. Like, there's so many that, you know, it's great to see. And I think that people are feeling more comfortable as themselves and putting their art out there.
Do you have a certain need to make sure that Boston run continues? Like, wherever you go, do you suggest, you know, Boston artists to people who will listen?
Yeah, I'm damn near about to get fired for bringing up too many artists. Like, I've stopped saying where the artists are from if they are from Boston, just because I want them to take me seriously. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I always throw Boston in the mix. It's super important to me. I think that you know, I'm always gonna ride for them. You know, I'm always gonna ride for Boston. I'm trying to bring back what I can, and whether it's like panels, whether it's like just, you know, always leaving my DMs open for people and all that type of stuff.
Well, does that actually work? Because, listen, we get a lot of DMs as well.
But we also don't have any real purpose for people DMing us, like, their music.
Never, never.
Like, we can't put you on, we can't do anything.
I do think the funny thing that comes with those DMs is the lack of directness, you know, in certain respects.
Yeah.
And it's not like, hey, Eric and Jeff, I appreciate you for this. This is what I am looking to get done.
No, it's, I made music, here it is, listen to it now, drop everything.
So Jeremy, yeah. is there a good end game to it, and do you find value in people DMing you?
There's a lot to sift through, for sure. And there's definitely a lot of just links. And, like, to me, you know, I don't, that's not my thing. I don't like just getting a link with no context or anything like that. So I kind of ignore those and whatever. But, like, if somebody's like, hey, Jeremy, like, and they start off like a, you know, in a nice, you know, just respectful way, I'm gonna hear them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've definitely, you know, come across some good stuff, and from people I've never heard of, from people, you know, that have, they're like interested in getting in the industry and don't know really how to, within that city or whatever. And I'm always down to, you know, to lend an ear and to give advice if I can. I mean, shit, y'all did that for me.
Yeah. I mean, well, yes. Talk about that, Jeremy. That's why we brought you on the podcast, to talk about me and everything I've done for you.
Right. Jeremy DM'd Jeff and said, hey, listen to my music. And
yep.
Jeff said,
and then I said,
I will drop
no.
everything.
Yeah, absolutely not. But but Jeremy, what was the first concert you went to in Boston?
Like, in terms of like rap shows and stuff like that, knowing like I was, you know, this was it.
No, like, what was the first concert you went to?
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be an embarrassing answer.
In Boston, if it's like
first
new
concert ever,
new kids on the block, new kids on the block, new kids
yeah.
on the block,
no, I'm not,
hometown
not
show.
No, I'm not that old, man. Probably like, I think Third Eye Blind at the Orpheum.
Wow,
sick. Or Shakira at the Garden.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait,
those
okay.
are probably my first.
Wait,
my first
who did you go to the Shakira concert with?
Like my family.
Yes.
My sister and shit, you know.
Yes.
Like,
when you saw her at the Super Bowl this year, were you like, yo, I was there at the early end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I discovered her at the Garden.
She DM'd me, yeah.
Yeah. She actually had some weird visuals too. She had like Saddam Hussein playing chess with George Bush and stuff. And,
oh,
like, all sorts of stuff. And I was like, okay.
Man, her third eye was very not blind.
third eye, not blind for sure.
Jeremy, when you moved to LA, did you know what to expect?
Jeremy stepped off the bus and he said, "This city has opened itself up to me."
That's right.
Yeah.
I said, on dogs, where's the nearest donkey? No, I think I didn't know what to expect. I think a lot of people, especially back home, were like, you know, you're going to hate it. Like, everyone's fake, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, L.A. has that stigma of like Hollywood and, you know, fake it till you make it, whatever. And you can find that for sure. But like, I think the biggest, you know, revelation that came rather quickly was that it's just like every other city. Like, you can find that, you can find good pockets of good people, you can find like anybody in the world. You know, there's a million transplants out here too, and there's like LA natives are dope. Like, there's so much culture out here, and it's just like you can find whatever, you know, just like any city, man. And
who are some of the most important people that you found in Los Angeles?
Man, you can, man, other Boston people, come on. No. I mean, I think that like Aisha White, when I started working for Aisha White, I think that really helped me learn a lot about different movers and shakers or whatever in the city, and just like you know, getting my hands dirty with all the music stuff out here. She's mm-hmm. you know, an LA native, and has been doing, you know, PR stuff for a long time. So I think that was definitely like a huge plus, meeting her early on.
Being in LA during a pandemic, does Boston feel super far? I mean, like, do you have a regular like Zoom call with your family? Like, how do you keep in touch?
Yeah, I think that it's actually funny. I think that all of this has brought like people back into my life. I've been talking to some high school friends and stuff like that that I haven't talked to in like, you know, 4 or 5 years. But because everybody's at home, everyone's on Zoom or whatever, you know, I feel like that's kind of just, hey, you guys want to, you know, chop it up? Like, see, you know, like even childhood friends, people that I haven't seen in like 10 years, you know, 10, 15 years. Like, it's definitely been interesting that it's brought people closer together, because everyone's kind of freaking out, you know, everyone's freaking out together. It's something that everyone is like has in common right now, you
yeah
know?
I am just doing the math real quick.
Mm-hmm. No, I know, I said 10 years.
Jeremy is 23 years old.
Well, he saw Shakira back in 1996.
Yeah, I know. Jeremy, how is the workday changed for you now that you don't have an office to go into? How do you keep up with your coworkers? How do you listen to new music or make sure that your projects are going to be like up to par? And how do you continue to put out work?
I think that for the most part, I mean, the biggest thing that's changed other than like seeing people in real life is, I'm not in the studio or anything like that. So I can't hear anything at the level I want to hear. But, you know, I always go, if there's something that I need to hear for quality or whatever, I'll just run out to my car and kind of sit in my car and just listen to music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're constantly, you know, talking all day, and we're on Zoom a couple times a week and making sure that everyone's rollout is, you know, up to par with what we can do. And even just coming up with new ideas during a pandemic, like how do we, you know, continue to push music in a meaningful way without, you know, all these things that we're missing, like live shows and in-person press and stuff like that.
Jeremy, you're online a lot, like we are online a lot. I feel like everybody is online a lot right now. Who are the best and most underrated follows on Twitter right now?
Oh man, Tosh
Patwari.
Patwari.
Oh,
is probably
not Daniel Tosh.
No.
We're talking Tosh 3.0.
Yeah, we're talking 3.0. I think Tosh is a great follow. If you read Tosh's stuff too, and then you watch Deezus and Mero, just go ahead and do that, because like there's definitely some
influence.
There.
Well, he also works there for them, no?
I know, now he does, and now I'm like, oh, this makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
It's the real.
Oh,
the real
stop.
Solid content.
Jeremy, you're already on the show. You don't have to do this to get.
That's the concussion talking.
Yeah. Watching the Jordan documentary, you know, you grew up in Boston. We grew up in New York. We were not Jordan fans. I can't imagine that you were either. What is it like to watch Jordan, like, in modern context? Like, is it a strange thing to sort of respect a guy that you used to hate?
No, I think that, I mean, Jordan, I think, is incredible. I mean, obviously, he's incredible. But I've really been enjoying it. I don't hate him as much as I hate some other people.
Name every single one of them.
But like when I was growing up, Jordan was kind of done, you know.
Again, so, you're 23 years old, so of course, yeah.
No, but my big thing was Lakers, you know. My big thing was Lakers Celtics. So it was like.
And then you go and live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but that's Jeremy's like a mole.
No, I mean, it's really like people are like, hey, like, you know, you probably shouldn't wear that Red Sox hat here. And I'm like, yeah, right. Like, what are you talking about? I it's been a great documentary, especially for, you know, while everyone's locked down or whatever.
Yeah.
I was saying yesterday, though, like, I was like, damn, like, listen to Jordan talk about Bird like that. And
yeah,
like, you know, it has nothing to do with anything, but I was just like, yeah, he wanted to be in that category with Bird, and like to hear him say that, I was like, oh yeah, all right, cool, yeah. Solidifies Bird.
As we go into this new world of virtual concerts, how thankful are you that you're not promoting shows like you did about 10 years ago?
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, I am very thankful for that. It sucks because, I mean, who doesn't want to go to shows and who doesn't want to go to... Actually, it's funny, when you asked me my first show, my first rap show in Boston was Styles P, actually.
Wow.
And it was, he didn't come on till like 2 in the morning. There's like 100 people on stage. It was wild. It was great.
That's everything you want, you know?
Exactly.
Wait, was it the same thing with Third Eye Blind?
Yeah, Third Eye Blind, same thing. 100 people on stage. You know, girls running around, you know, scandalous.
Yeah.
You know, all that.
And but, Jeremy went with his family.
And, yeah. And I was there with my whole family. They waited till 2 a.m.
Anything else, Jeremy?
Hey, man, I just I appreciate you guys. Oh, what I wanted to say was, you know, I think that that what you guys are doing is an incredible thing. Everybody needs to, you know, needs new content. I think content is going to be key during this time, not just for consumers, but I would imagine for y'all. I think this is probably, you know, healthy for y'all, too.
It's very necessary for us. I would argue against it being healthy. This is sort of like knocking our heads
against the shower caddy.
Into the shower caddy.
Yeah.
On our end. Jeremy, we love you. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
I love you guys. Appreciate it.
And now, Jeff, let's get on the phone with Houston's own Maxo Cream.
Ba-na-na-na-na. Ba-na-na-na-na-na.
That makes sense.
Ba-na-na-na-na-na.
Yo,
Maxo,
what up?
What's the word?
What's happening? How are you hanging in?
I'm cool in court. I'm trying to quarantine, playing Grand Theft Auto, eating Doritos. You feel me?
Listen, when you were up here for your full A Waste of Time with It's the Real interview, you talked about your shoe collection and how extensive it is and how hard it is and how, like, how many shoes you have in your crib. So that begs the question, if you're in quarantine for this long a period of time, are you switching up your shoes every single day?
I'm not even rocking shoes. I'm rocking these little flip-flops around the house.
That's it?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep everything dead stock because I just tried to wear some of my shoes from back in high school, and they crumbled on me.
Oh.
Five red fives.
Damn.
Like, I was looking like Calvin Cambridge in all my socks.
Wait, you were wearing them from, like, you know, the couch to the fucking kitchen?
Nah, I tried to go play, so look.
Did not work out.
On the basketball court. Like in Fitzroy, Houston, that's still open because all the basketball courts closed.
Yeah.
So we had to hop the fence, do all that shit.
Damn.
Ran like one game of 21. In the middle of 21, whole shoe come apart.
Oh.
You were like Zion.
Is a regular day for you right now even regular anymore? Like, how has life changed over the last month?
I wake up, smoke a blunt, kick my bitch out, play the game. Eat some food, go to the studio, smoke again, go to fucking sleep.
Is there anybody at the studio, like, with you, or are you just, like, going solo? Like, how is your recording process like?
I still move with, like, my little brother. My manager might pull up, but I got studio in my crib, too.
Mm. Do you trust an engineer to come in, or are you handling all that yourself?
Yes, I trust the engineer to come in as long as I light saw him down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And he get the hand sanitizer.
So have you gone to, like, you know, the store and bought out all the sanitizer you can and all the gloves and all the protective things that you need?
I'm not going to hold you. I still got, like, so when I moved into this crib, like, in December, I bought a big-ass thing of hand sanitizer, and I still got it. Same one. I just hate it. I just keep it inside my room. So I got a big-ass thing of hand sanitizer. And then, shit, I make sure, like, my assistant bleached the whole house.
Were you, like, a germaphobe before all of this? Like, were you, like, mentally prepared for being afraid all the time of germs?
Hell no. I was not. I wasn't no nasty-ass nigga. But at the same time, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't just, like, super-duper, you know what I'm saying, COD. That wasn't me.
I mean, the thing is, there's, like, a whole spectrum, right? Because, like, you know, there are people, obviously, everybody washes their hands. Well, maybe not everybody, but everybody should wash their hands.
Right.
But, like, there are also people who wipe down everything.
There's people who get on the who got on the planes before any of this happened, and they brought all the Lysol, and they brought like sprays, and they brought gloves to wear on the airplane. That was not you.
That wasn't me.
That'd be crazy.
If you're not, you know, throwing on a new pair of shoes every day just to walk around your house, are you even getting dressed up, or are you just keeping it all sweats?
All Nike Tech suits, all Warren Lotus Tech, like, you know what I'm saying, the top and bottom units. Like, I'm mad cozy, but, like, even, like, you know what I'm saying, I know on my gram, you might see me in mirror jeans, Balenciaga, you know what I'm saying, when I pop out, I'm a Nike Tech suit type nigga. Like, I'm, like, I probably got 20 Nike Tech suits, so I just rotate those.
Are they all different colors, or is it just, like, black every single day?
All different colors. Well, shit, I got, like, some all gray, all black, and I got, like, a black and gray, I got a black and white. And I got like a purple, then I got the red, and I got the red and black, then I got the black and blue. I got hella colors.
Are you looking at them right now?
Look, listen. My Nike Tech suit collection is crazy.
Yeah, apparently.
Yo, I can listen to you talk about your Nike Tech suits this entire time.
You sound like a Nike salesman.
Yeah.
Man, Nike need to go ahead. You know, I did something with Nike, though. Me, Nike, and Foot Locker dropped the Air Max 95 in Houston.
Yeah.
We did that. But, man, they need to tap in and, you know, go ahead, come on with it.
What is it like in Houston right now? Are people, like, taking this seriously? Are they staying? Like, obviously, you were talking about, like, the courts being closed, but are people staying indoors, or are they still moving?
Man, it depends. In my hood, niggas moving around. Niggas ain't listening to that shit, bro.
That's
but
fucked
then,
up.
Like, in my neighborhood, like, cause I stay in the suburbs myself, but, like, in the hood I'm from, niggas ain't listening to that shit. Niggas is still on the block in the hood. In the suburbs, you might see somebody walking their dog or doing a jog, but not too much.
Yeah,
I mean, not to get, like, too deep, but, like, I just want to know, like, the scope of it. How many people do you know who have gotten coronavirus?
Man, do I know anybody? For real? I mean, I know Slim Thug.
Yeah,
I know,
right.
Scarface.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, like, here in New York, it's just, like, we know, like, tons
of people. A
bunch of people,
yeah.
Right. But I don't lie, I think niggas out here got it, we just don't know.
Yeah,
like, that's niggas not going to the doctor. Niggas so asymptomatic they don't give a fuck.
That's the really scary part.
But,
the people who are asymptomatic.
But that's the worst. But look, that's the worst. So that means you spreading it. You have no concern. You don't give a fuck what's going on with other people. But the next person might not be asymptomatic. You feel me?
Yo, so Maxo, we got the distinct impression when you were here that you're a leader, right? You know how to, like, you know, take charge, and you know when to say something is not right. If people in your, like, circles are outside and they're not, you know, sort of abiding by, like, common sense, are you going to, like, pull them aside and just be like, yo, like, get inside and, like, stop fucking up?
Yeah, but I'm not going to pull them aside. I might send them a text like, hey, you dumbass nigga, you going to die from corona if you don't go in the fucking house. Stupid. Like, what the fuck?
While you've been inside, have you been, like, killing time by watching movies or going through Netflix?
Wasting fucking time.
Oh.
Wasting fucking time. But now I've been doing a lot of recording, but everything I do is educational. Like, so, it's these interviews. Like, so y'all know what Skid Row is, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles? Right,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's these interviews called Soft White Underbelly. And, like, they get the most, like, gruesome interviews. Like, it'd be ex-crackheads, ex-terror addicts, ex-gangbangers. But then, like, they be having shit like ex-mob bosses. But I had to stop watching it because I was watching one, and one of them said, ex-rapist. I'm like, oh, fuck
Jesus.
No.
Wait, you know, so what do you get out of those? What do you get out of that programming?
Man, shit, you know what I'm saying? You know, I just lost my brother.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? Like really losing my brother made me realize, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the worst pain on earth. So when other people lose, like usually, like, if, like, it's the opposite, somebody I don't fuck with, I'm like, fuck you, you could die. But losing my brother got me looking like, nah, bro, death hurts so bad, you don't want that pain on nobody. So like, now whenever somebody died close to me, or, like, let's say I got a partner, right, his son just died, I feel his pain because I just lost my brother, so I try to be there for him and bring him up. And then, like, you know, so on the episode of the interviews, this one dude, they got, like, half his head blown off with a shotgun.
Jesus.
And then he talked about his whole story, and at the end of the story, he said, you know what I'm saying, he blessed to be alive. God is good. And this is a man that got half his head blown off, half his brain gone. He got to use the back of his brain. So it just let me realize that, you know what I'm saying, I'm blessed. No matter what I'm going through, just stay strong and stay blessed. So that's wow. What I get from those interviews. Plus, it's good topics for music. You know, I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
They tell a lot of stories. You know what I'm saying? They paint a lot of pictures. So You know what I'm saying? It's a good exercise for my next tape coming up.
Max, so first of all, rest in peace to your brother. I've been thinking about you this past month. I hit up Ezra, but I was wondering, what is it like to grieve in quarantine? Like, you know, you're around like your small team, but like, it's got to be a lot of alone time, right? And so, like, how are you doing with all of that?
Shit, you know what I'm saying? It gave me a lot of time to think, but at the same time, it gave me a lot of time to, like, you know what I'm saying, realize the good that could come from this and what I can do with Flip, you know what I'm saying? Like it really gave, like, my time, I mean, like, my family time to grieve.
Yeah.
And not deal with the real world. You feel me?
Yeah.
So, like, everything had to stand still. Instead of, like, if everything was still going on, like, if I was on, like, tour in Australia and got that news, that would have been fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, at least I'm here to, like, you know what I'm saying, comfort my mom. Shit like that. But, yeah, this Corona shit, like, doing a funeral in Corona got to be, like, the worst shit on earth.
Having, like, a Zoom conference for the funeral is just, like,
it's sad. It's inhumane, you know? Maxo, when you were up here in New York for your album release, it was at the 4040 Club. We came through, and a bunch of people were there. J. Cole was there, which is really cool. But your label fully came out and represented, and obviously, like, Jay Grand, who's the best, was there, and everyone was in full support. That's what a major label should do, right? We expect that. That makes sense. When you have a family member pass, when you have, you know, this pandemic that goes on, what is the involvement of RCA in your life these days?
I mean, RCA is RCA, you know, they there, you know what I'm saying, they're there to comfort me. But, you know, Rock Nation, you know what I'm saying, they stepped up, you know what I'm saying, shout out Rock Nation, shout out Hov, you know what I'm saying, they stepped up, but you know what I'm saying, they helped me out with my brother's funeral.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really good. That's above and beyond, you know?
Yeah, but shit, it wasn't even really because, like, you know, it was Rock Nation, but at the end of the day, it was really Hov. You know what I'm saying? Me and Hov got a good relationship, you know what I'm saying? So,
Is there anything that you expect from management or the label during, like, this time right now? Do you need support from them, or are you just so, like, in your zone there, you're just like, I'm just going to record, I'm just going to prepare myself for when this is over?
And then just, like, deliver shit.
Hold on, give me one second.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm on Grand Theft Auto. I had to kill somebody. Because these motherfuckers were blowing me up all goddamn
day. By the way, of all the ways to get put on hold, this is the best
way.
Oh,
I absolutely agree. Can you take us through, like, where you are in Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Hello?
Yeah. Wait. Where are you in Grand Theft Auto's world?
I'm online right now. I'm going to I'm setting everything up for the casino heist. Oh.
And
how many strippers have you killed?
Shit. See, so during the quarantine, I had to start over because I moved from LA back to Houston.
Yeah.
So I lost a lot of shit, but like recently, I ain't really been focused on my prostitutes on here. Oh. I ain't been killing no bitches.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say strippers. They're really sex workers, and we support them.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Maxo, do you expect anything from the label or management right now, considering that you are recording and planning, and do you have a plan moving forward? Do you need anyone to sort of co-sign that, or is it just like your mission right now just to do you?
Really just to do me. I don't really depend on the label for shit, except for when the tape ready. Like,
that's good.
Like, Brandon Banks is my first album with a label. I got like six other tapes independent. You feel me?
Yep.
So I know how to run the business. I know like everything. You feel me? Like, not everything, but I've been doing this shit for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I understand right now doing my process is nothing really for the label to do. I get my own features. I don't need them for shit.
Yeah.
Just probably.
That's dope.
Give me some beats. Give me some beats, and when I take ready, don't push back no dates. We lit.
There you go. So you talked about moving from Los Angeles back home. If you were to go through quarantine in Los Angeles, how do you think that would go?
Probably be even more weed.
Yeah, but
you know
how do you?
I got a girlfriend now, so shit.
Shout out
she's
to her.
Cool. But if I was in LA, I'd probably be single, so it'd be more strippers.
There you go. Like
more parties. I probably wouldn't even quarantine. I ain't gonna lie.
Really?
LA brings the dream out of me.
Really? How did you come to like that conclusion?
Man, I just turned up in LA. There's so much to fucking do. Like Houston, I'm from here, so I don't want to be local. You feel me? So I sit my ass in the house. I'm not from LA. I don't give a fuck. So I'm everywhere.
I thought we were talking about Grand Theft Auto. I was just like, I was really confused.
About real life.
LA brings the demons out, you know?
Yeah, it's demon time.
Are you still doing online shopping? Are you going on like any of the shoe websites, StockX or anything? Are you still ordering in kicks?
Man, I ain't looking at no clothes, but I was thinking about today going to cop some Warren Lotus, probably some Amiri. You know what I'm saying? So selective pieces. As far as shoes, I'm not buying no shoes. As far as designer shoes or sneakers, unless it's like a drop I really need, like DMP6s or like those Dior Jordan 1s, you feel me? Shit like that. This year I'm not going to cop none unless it's real hype DC, like some real hype DC shit.
Yeah, and like once in a lifetime sort of thing. Maxo, who...
Nah, not even, just like the off-white, like I just cop the off-white files. Like, you know what I'm saying? If Travis drops them... Like, Travis dropped some yellow sixes, I'm copping them. You feel me?
Well, he would probably send them to you, no?
He do. But see, I still bought one. I had one to rock and one to stop.
That's dope.
Yeah. Who's somebody that's like...
I'm going to support you. I ain't no broke-ass nigga. I found out Travis. I went on my SBs, nigga.
Listen, I'm broke.
I FaceTimed this nigga Travis like 2 weeks ago. He even the same thing. I got you, bro. I got you. See your address, bro. I got you, bro. Anything you need. Well, I need my goddamn shoes, Travis.
Yo, that's a pretty good Travis, by the way.
Yeah, that was really good. When you need something in a pandemic, it's not paper towels and it's not toilet paper.
No, it's Travis's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna fuck with no toilet paper. As long as I got some Travis Scott's, I'm good.
That's all we can hope for.
Did you see that Clark Kent, you know, has been spending obviously all of his time at home, and he tweeted recently that he realized that he has way too many shoes and he does not have any need for that. Have you come to the same conclusion walking around, you know, your home day in and day out looking at all of these boxes of shoes?
No, I walked around my shoe like I got some bullshit I need to re-up. There's a lot of shit I need to get rid of.
Where are my Travis Scott's?
Yeah. Like, cause bro, okay, man, like, see, I graduated class in 2008, you feel me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Sneaker Collective for me was like, oh, I can't wait for the brand 11s to come out. Like I remember trying to get the DMP package just for the 11s. It was $900. I was like, I would never spend that much on shoes. Now, when shoes drop, if you're not spending $1,500 that week, you won't be spending fucking $3,000 next month. And next year, five bands. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this shit is crazy. And me... You know what I'm saying? I'm a super duper sneakerhead. Plus, I dress with my shit. So I just got to just be on top of all the shit I need. You know what I'm saying?
So are you saying it's weird now to actually wear shoes?
Yes, bro. They fucked it up.
Listen, Maxo, we love you. Take care of yourself down there. Take care of all your family down there. Stay inside. Get your team to stay inside, too. And hopefully we see you on the other side of this. All right?
Just a bit.
Shout out to Maxo Cream, shout out to Jeremy Corellis, and shout out to Mozzie. Jeff, are we back tomorrow?
We are back every day forever.
As always, guys, now for real.
Sure.
See you guys tomorrow.